Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in again for another week of Tez Talks Taxes. I have a lot of interesting topics for you guys this evening, some topics that business owners can benefit from, and people who invest or even people who are looking to invest. So just to tell you a little bit about myself, I have over two decades of experience that includes governmental and corporate accounting, corporate and individual taxation, as well as teaching and writing on tax and financial issues. Also, experience with handling IRS audits. So I'm here to just take that knowledge that I have and just spit it back out for you guys to be able to absorb and learn and get a lot of answers to questions that people may ask and people just talk about things that a lot of people are not familiar with. So before I get into it, I first want to let you guys know about the upcoming shows that we have here on this station. On Thursdays at 9 p.m., we have the Realist Radio Show, which is with Tasha Nicole Wright and Alyssa Noriega. On Friday and Saturday at 10 p.m., we have Pregame Radio with Brooklyn Black and Hoffa. And Sundays, we have Love, Peace, and Slander with Lady Steele and Mr. Earl Gray. And I would love for you guys to tune into those shows and listen in and check that out as well. So last week when I ended the show, I mentioned that I was going to talk about buying a house for its unpaid property tax. And I want to just jump right in before our first song to tell you all about that right now. So just to give you a little bit of background, if a homeowner fails to pay their property taxes that they're owed on their home, it could lead to its eventual tax foreclosure. Now, homes that are foreclosed for this reason end up either for sale or on the auction block. Generally, you can purchase a home that has gone through this type of foreclosure for the amount of taxes owed on it if you can outbid other hopeful purchasers. So let's talk about these actual tax foreclosure sales. Now, for the record, I want you to know that the most common real property sale that the government holds is the foreclosure for a tax sale. So if you want to be a savvy tax sale bidder, you should research the tax foreclosed properties that are up for bid and then determine their bid amount off of that research. And in certain tax sales, find that there are mortgage lenders or other lien holders that may show up to bid on those homes themselves so that they can protect their own interest in the property. So you're going to have a little bit of competition there when you are placing your bid. Now, again, let me remind you that, you know, purchasing these properties at the tax foreclosure sale are not for an uninformed buyer. You must do your research because some homes may have other liens on their titles, and that lien will become the responsibility of you as the new owner. And just because a property was foreclosed for a small amount of property taxes doesn't mean that that will be the property's sale price. So look out for that as well. And you also know that the structure of these, you know, auctions are actually like an oral public auction. So maybe it's best for you to go to a couple of them just to get the experience under your belt and see how it's operating before you actually jump in. Now, when you're looking to win an auction of this type, you need to remember, again, as I mentioned, that banks will try to be there in order to protect their interests. So these types of sales do attract large institution investors, such as the bank or any other mortgage lender. And often they will purchase the more attractive foreclosed property, leaving behind, you know, other smaller properties for the smaller investors or the hopeful home buyers. You're kind of like taking over the scraps, so to speak. And I don't want to call it scraps because you may find a true gem within this pick. But anyway, smart investors should know the value of the properties first. And while they hope to get a property that they only can, you know, that is only for the amount of the taxes owed, you can also look to get a property where it's at least 20 cents below the market value. So you'll still be getting a great deal by trying to purchase properties through this whole entire tax sale thing. So I do want to, you know, have a key note to you that it's good to do your research. It's good to know what you're getting involved in. It's good to know who your competition is. It's good to maybe go to a few to check it out and see how it's ran before you actually do this. But, hey, if you find a diamond in the rough, it could be a great come up for you, you know. And unfortunately, it's somebody's misfortune. But, you know, things like this happen. And I'm giving you this this information so that you don't have to pass it up. All right. So I am going to take a quick break. And then I'll be back to talk about my next topic, which is going to be in regards to understanding tax-deferred investing. All right? See you in a little bit.
Phil, 2G, 2000 watts. Yeah.
Hey, welcome back, and thank you for listening in again. This topic that I'm going to talk about right now is in regards to tax-deferred investing. I want more people to know almost all their options, and there are a few more options than what I'm going to talk about, but I hope that this just brings awareness to you. Now, you know, when you're attempting to save money for your children's future or their future education or even for your own retirement, there are a number of ways to do so. For example, investing in the stock market, buying real estate for income or appreciation purposes, or simply putting money away in an education savings account or a retirement plan account. But knowing the various different saving vehicles that are taxed and how the circumstances can be best suited for your needs will help you out a lot. So we're going to begin by examining these tax nuances for, we're going to start with the IRA accounts. So individual IRA accounts, there are two types. First, we're going to talk about the traditional and then the Roth. And even though they are both IRAs, there's a huge difference in their tax treatment. So first, the traditional IRA. Number one, contributions to a traditional IRA are generally tax deductible unless you have a retirement plan at work. And then the IRA contribution may not be deductible if you are a high income taxpayer. So those are the two key things to remember. If it's a retirement plan at your job, and if you are or not a high-income taxpayer. Okay, now all of the earnings from a traditional IRA are tax-deferred, which means that they are not taxable currently, but will be when the funds from the account are withdrawn. Now, since the contributions were tax-deductible, everything you withdraw from the traditional IRA will be taxable. And an exception to this last statement is when you did not claim a deduction for that money that you contributed to the IRA, either by choice or by law. Say, for example, if the law didn't allow a deduction, that would be an exception to what I just mentioned. Now, in this case, withdrawals from a traditional IRA would be prorated as partially taxable and partially tax-free. Now let's talk about the Roth IRA. This is very short and sweet, actually, because Roth IRA contributions are never tax-deductible. Earnings are never taxable if the account meets a five-year aging rule and if the distributions begin after you reach age 59 and a half. If you have questions on what that five-year aging rule is, just feel free to reach out to me and I'll discuss it with you. Now, what's best? Because there's so many different options here when it comes to certain things. As a matter of fact, we'll stick with the traditional versus Roth IRA part on this one. But let's talk about what's best. It really just depends on your particular circumstances. For example, if you need the tax deduction to fund the IRA, then by all means, use the traditional IRA. However, if you can afford to make a contribution without the deduction, then the Roth IRA will be the best because everything is tax-free when withdrawn, which is usually at retirement when people take the money out. Now, let's talk about retirement plans. You know, so we're going to discuss plans such as the 401k. If you are a teacher, then you may have a 403b. If you're a government employee, you would have a 457 plan. And then if you're self-employed, there's a KEO plan, and there's also the SEP plan for people who are self-employed. So we'll talk about the consequences of these, which basically, for the most part, they're the same as the traditional IRA. However, allowing the amount contributed to be excluded from your income, which is deferred, and then the distributions are fully taxable when they're taken, okay? So I'm going to repeat that. They allow the amount contributed to be excluded from income, and then the distributions are fully taxable when they are taken. A distribution, by the way, is when you're taking money out of that particular retirement account. However, for a 401k and a 457 plan, they may both have the Roth option, under which there is no income exclusion for the contributions, but the distributions at retirement are tax-free, okay? And if individuals have used both methods, the non-Roth contributions are deferred and the earnings are fully taxable. Now we're going to talk about the bank savings account. A lot of people are familiar with this, so I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Basically, when money is put away into a bank savings account or even a CD account, the earnings are fully taxable at the and in the year when it's earned. So when you're filing your tax return, you're going to receive a 1099 interest statement from your bank. That's going to say how much interest you receive. If it's 20, 30, 40 bucks, if it's 100 bucks, you need to put it onto your tax return because that money is taxable income. All right. However, after the tax on the annual earnings is paid, the full balance in the account is available without any further tax. Now let's go on to the short and the long-term capital gains. Now, capital gains refers to the gain from the sale of capital assets, which is typically stocks, bonds, and real estate. Now, short-term capital gains are taxed at the ordinary tax rate, while long-term capital gains enjoy special lower rates. So long-term capital gains are the candy in the candy store. That's exactly what you want. You know, that's what you want to go for. But in order to qualify for that long-term capital gain treatment, you have to have had that asset for a year and a day. Okay, so just remember that rule. However, low-income taxpayers, in their situation, there's usually no tax on that capital gain. So if you have a capital gain and you're a low-income taxpayer, you most likely won't have to pay tax on that. But if you are a high-income taxpayer and you have a capital gain, well, your rate may be 20%, which is the max. However, for high-income taxpayers, without the capital gains rate and without the capital gain benefit, that rate is actually 37% at the max. So you are at an advantage for having the capital gains rate. And again, I just want to tell you the averages. For the average taxpayer, the capital gain rate is 15%, which, as I said, is still a significant savings over the regular tax rates. Now let's talk about the education savings account. Okay, so the tax code provides for two advantages, and those types of accounts are the Coverdell Education Savings Account and the Qualified Tuition Plan, which is also known as the 529 plan. Now, neither provides tax-deductible contributions, but both plans' earnings are taxable. Both plans' earnings are tax-deferred and are tax-free if used for allowable expenses such as tuition and books. And in some situations, you may be able to write off other things. You know, so a lot of times people ask about certain expenses that aren't eligible under, you know, the type of tax deductions that you'll see or the tax benefits that you'll see on your tax return. But if you look into the 529 or the Coverdell plan, those expenses are allowed. Now we're going to, you know, proceed on to talk about these plans and just to let you know that the greatest benefit is derived by making contributions to the plan as soon as possible, meaning if your child is one day old, then you should start making contributions there because the years that it takes to accumulate these earnings will maximize your benefits to it. However, there are different limitations for the two plans and the dollar amounts that you can contribute. For example, for the Coverdell, it's a $2,000 per year max. But you can have full contribute into that account. Whereas for a Section 529 plan, you could contribute a huge amount, even though it may be limited by your state or by certain rules. So you definitely got to check into that first. But the amounts contributed to a 529 plan are usually higher than a Coverdell. I'm going to move on to the health savings account, all right? And they're also known as an HSA. Many of your employers may have these type of accounts. And they're generally established by taxpayers only if they have a high deductible health plan. So first find out from your employer if you have one of those and if you qualify. Now, here's the thing. The contributions are tax deductible. The earnings accumulate are the earnings accumulate tax-free, and the distributions are tax-free if used for qualified medical expenses. So bang, 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 three things that are great about this. The contributions are tax-deductible, the earnings accumulate tax-free, and the distributions are tax-free if used for qualified medical expenses. Now, when part of an employer-sponsored plan, HSAs are their contributions, your wages. So you want to also keep that in mind. Now, once the account holder reaches 65, which is your age, once you reach age 65, it's taxable but penalty-free, okay? Your distributions, we're talking about, they will be taxable but penalty-free, all right? And even if they are not used to pay medical expenses or to reimburse you for medical expenses previously paid, it's still taxable but penalty-free, all right? So this may be something good for you to look into if you have high medical costs, because it can turn out to be a big benefit for you. Now, I do want you to look into all these things, because nothing is simple when it comes to this, and there are tons of rules that apply to all of these arrangements. But if you reach out to me, maybe through Instagram, my handle is TaxExpert, or if you reach out to your accounting professional or your tax advisor, you'll be able to obtain more information on this. So I'm going to take a couple of minutes for a break, and then I'll be back to talk about the next topic, which is the most common mistakes small business owners make. All right, see you soon. Yeah.
Keep messing with my head. Should've protected. dishonesty, and you may not have thought it. Don't have to say it, what you did.
I already know.
Now there's just no chance. You and me. And don't it make you sad about it?
Hello and welcome back. We're on to our next topic, which is in regards to the top common mistakes that small business owners make and how to avoid them. A lot of times people will tell you about their mistakes, but they won't tell you about what you need to do to prevent these mistakes. Now, I understand that you're a business owner and you're an expert in your field, but that does not necessarily mean that you're an expert or that you're knowledgeable of the accounting aspects of your business. Now, there are several things that business owners are doing that actually are either financially limiting or that can just close the door to their business later on down the road. So if you know these roadblocks, it's best to understand them and fix them ahead of time before they become detrimental to you. We're going to jump right in and go to number one, choosing the right accounting software for your business, all right, small business accounting, okay? And you assumed that it would ideally match your business and be easy to jump into, but you tried it out, and guess what? It's not. The problem is that each business requires a carefully selected and even a customized accounting method. Now, there's always a risk related to regulatory compliance when the wrong accounting software is used or when information is overlooked. But to resolve this problem, you want to work with an accountant and a software professional that listens to your needs, learns about your business, and modifies your bookkeeping methods to meet your goals. Now, number two, your business has poor organization and record keeping. So it's quite common for small business owners to lack the time and skills that they need to effectively manage their record keeping and their bookkeeping. There's so much stuff to do, and it takes time away from your business. I always use this phrase that you have to work in your business and you have to work on your business. And as a small business owner, especially if you work a 9-to-5 or a full-time job or even a part-time job, it's very hard to do both, okay? So because of the fact that the time is not available for you to do these things, you need to find a way to make it possible. There's dozens of apps and cloud applications where you can actually keep track of a lot of your record-keeping needs, okay? This is actually one of the easiest things to solve, but I find that a lot of business owners are not doing it. Just set up a system that streamlines your business operations by looking into technology and investing your money into something that is going to allow you to do so. Number three is in regards to your cash flow versus your profit loss statement, okay? So many business owners are making money on paper, but they end up going under or showing a loss or not having enough funds when they're not getting paid fast enough. So how is this? How is it that you're actually profiting on paper, but you don't have the money in your account to pay your bills? Well, I'm going to tell you how it's possible. Let me just use an example that you may be able to relate to. If all of your bills, say if you're a business owner and you make $1,000 a month, okay, that's $12,000 a year. Say your expenses are $6,000 for the entire year, all right? So that means that you'll end up with a profit of $6,000 because if you have revenue of $12, expenses of $6, then the difference of that would be $6 as a profit. But what's happening is that sometimes business owners have all of their expenses due, say, in the month of February. And in the month of February, if you're making $1,000 a month, you have only accumulated $2,000 at that time. So you can't afford to pay your $4,000 worth of expenses. This is why cash flow is so important. Not only is it financially limiting, but it's also stunting your growth. And it's also putting you out of business depending on those particular circumstances. So understanding that this is important and the way that it impacts your business will help you know how to solve your problem. Okay, so you need to get to know and learn the best methods of managing cash flow. And if you need to take a loan out in the month of January so that you could pay those expenses that come out in February, it will help you tremendously. Now, number four. We're going to talk about not understanding standard accounting procedures and terminology. Now, again, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of business owners are experts in what they're doing, but they may not be experts in accounting and key terms or procedures such as setting up controls or bank reconciliations or balance sheets. It's like I'm speaking French sometimes, you know, or it's like I'm speaking a whole nother language that people just don't understand, you know. And this specific terminology is something that you actually need to get right. So it is possible to learn these terms and methods on your own because there's plenty of information available. Even if you were to Google something so that you could learn the basics, it's great. I think that all business owners should learn the basics, but if you can learn the basics, you really need to work with a tax professional that you can depend on so that that way you can begin to understand these laws. I believe that a tax professional should be able to give you a little bit of information. You know, I mean, I may operate differently from a lot of other professionals out there, but I try to give people information, as you can see, rather than just doing something and throwing it at them and saying, here, file this away. So work with somebody that will be willing to explain things to you so that you know what's going on. We're going to move on to number five, the small business budget. Now, a budget is very important because it provides financial insight. It offers guidance to you about where your business is right now and what your goals are. And if you do not have a budget, you don't realize what your key goals in your company is going to be harder to manage, okay? You don't want to walk around blindly without some type of sense of what's going on. This is actually one of the top mistakes. that a lot of business owners make, even though I listed it as number 5, is actually pretty high up on the list. Now, creating a budget may take some time and also a good amount of dedication, but once it's in place, you can depend on it, and you may need to modify, obviously, from month to month because things may change. If you're a seasonal business, your expenses are going to be sky high, you know, during the season that you are, you know, getting all your products or, you know, whatever the case may be. And if you're and then during the off season, the expenses may be low, but that's something for you to be aware of. There is actually a lot of software applications out there that will help you with this. In the comments section of the show, I'm going to post a few of those softwares out there so that you will be able to pick one. But I think that you should set a budget for yourself. And using the software would be the best way to go. But you want to get your bank statement. You want to figure out how much income you're earning, and you want to figure out how much money you're putting out toward your expenses so that you can create an actual and accurate budget. So pull up 3 months of your statements at the very least in order to do this. Number 6, too much, do it yourself. All right. A lot of business owners, and I'm going to be straight up about this, a lot of business owners simply try to save money by doing it themselves. And yes, it is true that you can cut your cost by doing this, all right? But it also creates a scenario in which you have no control over what you don't know. A lot of people end up in these situations, and then they have to pay someone to get them out of the situation, and it costs them way more money than what it would have cost if they just had that person on board for the beginning. So understand your limitations. Know where you probably need to bring in a professional and do so. On to number 7, the lack of tax planning. Oh, my God. You know, again, like taxes are something you should not just do one time a year. I tell people this all the time. As a matter of fact, in my last show, I talked about how you should have a mid-year review at the very least, okay? So, again, you know, you need to plan out your taxes all year long. You need to look at what's going on. You need to find out how you can save and, you know, put a strategy or something in place so that you can save on taxes. Because if you wait until January, whatever date of 2019 to do this, you may have missed out on who knows how many different saving advantages that are available to you because of the fact that you waited until the next year. So start your tax planning process now. Number 8, lack of modernization. Okay, a lot of people are doing like an old school way where they have a notebook and they're balancing their books using pen and paper. They're writing down their expenses using pen and paper. Come on, guys, you got to upgrade. You know, invest in some type of modernization or a cloud accounting system. I mean, these things can be costly, but if you know that your business needs it, then you really got to put that money aside for it. And number 9 is not realizing your true profit or loss, okay? So you may have a profit or loss sheet, but you may not have a lot of insight into what each line item means. More so, you may not know enough about methods for reducing costs or viewing potential. So this is something that you may need to talk to your professional about, your tax professional, so that you can boost your profit margins with simple changes to your methods. You want to alleviate all of these problems by taking this advice that I'm giving you and reaching out to professionals or investing in the right software so that you're not having these issues. So I'm going to take a break for a couple of moments. I'm going to come back with another topic. All right, so talk to you guys soon.
I know where to start. heart and what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
I'll take my time, we'll be all night, girl. So get ready, babe, I got plans for me and you. Whoa.
Even
know
what
we ran out of words to say.
Hello, thank you, and welcome back. I want to mention our sponsors because we really appreciate them. The first sponsor is ME Productions. I want you to use them for all of your media needs. You can find them on Facebook at ME Productions with a Z at the end, or you can shoot them an email at heyme.tv@gmail.com. We also have iCraveWear. I need you to check out their line of sacks, hoodies, and tees. You can also pick up your Time Heals All Wounds dad hats at iCraveWear.com. If you use the code PREGAME at checkout, you'll get 15% off. And our third sponsor is LitBK. Please check out their Star Power Tees and other pieces inspired by Brooklyn, New York, and pop culture. Use the code PREGAME is lit on the site, which is litbkny.com, for 20% off of your purchase, okay? So any of our sponsor information that you need to have a refresher on, or maybe you didn't hear it clearly, I'll put it down in the comment section of this show, so that way you'll be able to email them or go into their website. Okay. So now, as promised, the last topic is on business deductions for your vehicle, okay? Now, the business use of a vehicle was determined either by using the standard mileage rate or actual expenses. A lot of people get these two things confused, so I just want to give you a quick explanation of what they are. So the standard mileage rate is for business use. For a car, van, or pickup, or even a panel truck are, for 2018, 54.5 cents. It went up 1 penny from last year where it was 53.5 cents, okay? However, the standard mileage rate cannot be used if you have used the actual expense method in previous years, okay? This rule applies on a vehicle-by-vehicle basis. Keep that in mind. Now, the actual expense method is where taxpayers always have the option of calculating the actual cost of using their vehicles for the business rather than using the standard mileage rates, okay? So if fuel prices go higher, actual expenses may actually be a better option for you, especially with how the new depreciation limits are as well. So your actual expenses include your gas, oil, any type of lubrication, repairs, vehicle registration fees, insurance, and depreciation, of course. Or if you have a lease, it would include your lease payments. There are calculations that affect that, but there's not enough time for me to explain what those calculations are. Keep in mind that if you are using your vehicle for business and personal reasons, you need to be able to keep a log and records to show the difference between your deductible business use and your non-deductible personal use. Okay. Now, that will help you be able to correctly put your expenses down onto your tax return when you are trying to claim these expenses. If you have any additional questions in regards to them, please give me a call, and I will be able to – I'm sorry, not give me a call, but, I mean, you can call into the show, but you can reach me on Instagram at TaxExpert, and I will be able to explain this to you. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I really appreciate you guys listening in, and I will see you guys next week, same time. Take care.